to visit Perimeter once again. So it's a great pleasure, as I said, and I'm going to talk about something actually much more modest than maybe the title. You will see in which sense I mean that. It doesn't mean that I discard the existence of IR divergences, but I will show you a way to define at least for a large part of the effects correlators which do not have IR divergences, at least not the dominant single field inflation type. So this is based on a paper with Chris Burns, Michel Gerstenauer, Sami Nomi, and Gian Massimo Tesinato, and work in progress with two of those people. So the outline. Very brief recollection of IR divergences as they appear in the delta N formalism. Just for historical reasons, because this is the way they were, I think, first discussed, and this is the way how we started thinking about them. And it turns out that in this approach, one is naturally led to consider fluctuations not only of the number of e-foldings of this N, but also of the Hubble scale. And this together leads to a formulation which is then much more general and universal than delta N formalism, and which we call geometry of the reheating surface. I guess it is something like the semi-classical background in the language of Giddings and Sloss, whom we have overlapped and will explain in detail. And given all this, it is then also very natural to define infrared-safe two-point correlators, or even more general correlators. And from those, you can come back to the correlators with the IR divergences, and which gives, I think, an interesting and simplifying perspective of these divergences. And finally, I will comment on fairly straightforward extension to tensor modes, higher correlators, and an explicit calculation of the divergences. All right, so that has already been shown by several speakers. So I will consider some late constant energy density surface. And the simplest example, of course, is the reheating surface itself, of which I think as a true geometrical object. There's some space-like three-dimensional surface, which is the reheating surface, which has a certain metric, and I can write it like this. Okay. This is a certain choice of gauge, if you wish. And at the moment, I want you to think not about the dynamics, but really of the geometry of this reheating surface. And then, of course, for the moment, just to start this, we will ignore tensor modes and start with a known fact, is that this zeta, the curvature perturbation that you have here, can be calculated from the fluctuation of the scalar field at some time during inflation due to this expansion. I.e., you plug this perturbed field into the number of e-foldings minus the number of e-foldings of the background. And then this, as first, I think, emphasized here, can be in principle considered to more than linear order. I mean, the linear order is just a, so to speak, a triviality. It's a basic mechanism of perturbations. But then you can look at it as a higher order expansion. And
so let me be clear here. N is the number of e-foldings that you would calculate if you just had the background field, right?
Precisely. But it's, of course, different if I plug in here a different value of the vector.
So the same function as for the background, but you evaluate it for the space-time.
Yes. I think at that level, at linear order in delta phi, this is conceptually completely clear. It's just a slick, say, way to get the perturbation here, right?
It's a separate thing in this picture. You neglect basically gradients, a couple different...
Precisely. I do neglect gradients in this way.
Right. So that's an independent definition of zeta, right? That thing that you have on top, the ds squared.
Well, the claim is that this zeta that is an observable is calculated like that if this is the Gaussian random variable, say, the scalar field during inflation. That is the claim. Well, of course, approximately.
It's on a level.
Yes, at a very basic level approximation. Let me not, I would like to ask you to bear, I mean, the next one and a half transparency of delta N formalism, which we all know has conceptual difficulties, and beyond leading order, you know, it's doubtful. It's more for reason and motivation, historical reason, and how we approach this, that I present this. You will see after three transparencies, I'm going to go away from it, and if you say, don't even want to use the word that I am formalism, that's still fine. Okay.
So I also have a quick comment that the repeating surface is not necessarily the uniform and redundancy surface. So it is model dependent.
Oh yes, simplest, of course, single field, yes. Yes?
Oh, well, just a quick question on delta n. So can we think of it as a systematic expansion in a small expansion parameter or not, ultimately? What is the status of it?
The status, to me personally, is unclear. The more I have thought about it, the more it became unclear. I think it is clear that in leading order approximation, this is correct and this here is correct and justified and gives you the right result in a way that you can derive in a propagation variant way, but you can also get it that this, and I think if you say the right words with it, it's not cheating.
Wait.
Anything beyond that, I have my fewer conceptual doubts, which will become clear in a moment, and I would just ask you to wait for a second.
Okay. The expansion is basically the the gradient, norm of the gradient, and is much less than h.
There's deeper issues. We'll see in a moment. I mean, I agree with that is necessary, but maybe there are even more doubts. But as I said, please don't kill me for using the delta-n formula in the first two or three transparencies, okay? You will see why I'm doing this, okay? So now, let's calculate, as we already just discussed, the curvature correlator from this, i.e., I write directly in Fourier space zeta k zeta p and use the previous side, plug in this n phi delta phi, this is the first derivative, and this is the leading, say, correlator of the scalar field. And then, of course, there are all higher terms. I just wrote one of the many next to leading order terms, okay? Just as an example. And then, again, we are still at the motivation level. This is the, so to speak, leading higher order term, or one of them, and I focus on this term. And if you now evaluate this expectation value here, you see that this is delta phi squared of x, and you go to Fourier space, it becomes a convolution. So there are actually four delta phi's here with an internal loop momentum, or basically two internal loop momenta q and l here. And you can just work that out. I mean, you can just really calculate this by using the fact that the single delta phi is just this kind of expression. So it's h by the famous q over 3/2 times aq, which you might want to think at this level just as a random Gaussian variable. Gaussian random variable, just normalized to delta function. So it's fairly clear for those who know this, it's just a kind of fish diagram, it's just like this, two propagators together.
But what is in the square of that?
Sorry?
Why isn't the square of d3q over qq? It's a
root. Why is there no square of this here? Are you asking?
Should be two integrals?
No, it's one integral. It's one integral because, well, okay, so I, since everybody was generous, this kind of, let me just go into the details. It's like this. So there's external momentum here, which in this case is k, and say this is k, q and k minus q flowing like this and this. And the dominant piece comes from this propagator being infrared divergent. Is that okay with you?
Did you name it delta phi q term completely?
I'm just explaining one original. Of course, there are many more terms here. There are many more effects. They are all the same order. I mean, sorry. This is not the pi effect was not missing. I just to get the idea. So anyway, from this you immediately see you get a leading log contribution from the regime where this momenta here are much smaller than k and p. And this is just this integral as some prefactor. And then this integral evaluates to a logarithm.
This equation too is this thing.
Sorry.
Can you trust me in the following?
Yes.
I take this here and plug it in here, and I use Big Theorem, and I get this integral. Really, 100%, 100%, many times checked. Other people will confirm. It's nothing deeper than that. There's no tricks here. Just Big Theorem.
I understand.
No, I know very well that one can get confused, and you know, it's, I get confused many times. But at the moment, I just want you to see that this is like that, and nothing deep happens at that level. The important point to be mentioned here is, of course, the physical intuitive picture going with it, which is that you have these long wavelength modes, i.e. the soft loop momenta, and they affect the measured short wavelength fluctuations. And you can think of this in the following way. So this is the mode that we want to measure, the mode with frequency k. Okay? And there are some background modes which enter via this loop and which influence this measurement. And there are, of course, more, even longer wavelengths background mode. But at some point, I don't take them seriously anymore because they are so long wavelength that they can be absorbed in the background. By background, I mean everything that's constant on the scale of our visible universe, i.e. of our present Hubble scale. And it's explained by many people, so I apologize for quoting here only lies, specifically the paper Insulation in a Box, but there are certainly many, many people who understood it at various points in time and said it. Okay, so next. Of course, the question is, what is this L? And as I just explained, I think it's reasonable to assume that this L is the size of the observed universe. But we want, even if only for conceptual reasons, we want to care, or we do care, about the very large L limit. And this is, of course, not relevant to us. Our L is such that the logarithm is 60, and there's no way to go beyond that, because simply the number of e-foldings we access is not bigger than that. But in principle, at least in principle, you can go to a very, very late observer. Imagine our cosmological constant decays, and then this observer could, in principle, see an immensely large universe. Yeah? He could see the universe as big as produced by inflation, so this L could be a very large number. And let's try to care about this conceptually, at least. Okay, so now, obviously, the technical origin of the effect, as I explained previously, it came from higher order expansion of this quantity. So this n phi of phi was expanded to more than leading order. And so this delta phi inside here, this q much smaller than k, this produced, in its accumulative effect, it produced the infrared divergence. However, if you look back at the actual formula here, let's say here, then you see, of course, that there's not only the quantity n phi entering, but also the quantity h. And so there's no reason not to include these kind of fluctuations in the quantity h, i.e. in the Hubble scale, which also is part of this formula. So the background is relevant not only for n phi, but also for h. And if you do that, something very interesting happens. First of all, how do we do that? It's very simple. We modify the Hubble scale accordingly by writing our delta phi, this leading order delta phi, in the standard way, e to the I kx over k to the 3/2 times the Gaussian random variable times h. But now the argument of this h is, of course, the field at the moment when this mode exits the horizon, naively speaking. But then there is fluctuations on top of this, long wavelength fluctuations. And so I'm allowed to put inside here a delta phi background, which is, again, given by the same standard formula. Forgetting an h, actually. Yes?
I'm not sure I understand that formula. Is that sub k there meaning integration over k, or is that some kind of cutoff?
This is a proper integration over k. I write it down the phi of x.
Okay.
And you see that I'm assuming, basically, that there's the leading order formula is a Gaussian random variable times e to the ikx, k to the 3 half, h is normalization. But then I'm allowing for very slow, soft variations of this h. In the very same, and okay, so to come back to the criticism of delta n raised very early on, my best understanding of the higher terms of delta n formulas, if you expand beyond linear order, is that you basically are allowed to do that because you are thinking implicitly about exactly this effect. You are implicitly expanding to higher order in delta n, taking only the soft fluctuation seriously. That justifies it. But let me not go into this because it's not crucial for my talk. Okay, and now for this delta phi, I use the same formula, basically, just tree level. Now, at this order, I don't care about fluctuations of h. There's a constant h here in both.
Then we also need to insert this delta phi bar in the other coefficients as n prime or other derivatives.
In the n prime, that's a good point. It's automatic. Delta n formalism to higher order, and all people who discuss this type of loop of delta n formalism, they basically do nothing else but inserting this long wavelength fluctuations in n phi. Okay?
Yeah.
The claim that I'm making is it's absolutely necessary to think about it also to insert them in h. Okay. So now, I'm not going to show you the calculations, which are easy, but it's just a few lines, there's no time. We now use this modified delta phi in this formula. So again, Ziegler and phi plus delta phi minus n phi, standard approach.
You mentioned at the beginning that you would give us a modified delta n formalism that would be free of...
That's it, that was it.
This is it.
This is it. Okay. I'm explaining it, these two lines. So exactly the old formalism is delta phi modified as before. Delta phi modified means in the delta phi there's an h, and this h is pretty much the same way a function of the background modes as this due to the expansion to higher orders. So now we are expanding in this delta phi both hard and soft modes and using them in this correlator of zeta with zeta. And you can imagine that plugging this all together, again, it's Wick's theorem just we discussed before, but it's now complicated. I mean, there are many diagrams, many more than this, and delta phi's come from n and from h and so on. But after the dust has settled, the interesting point is that all the higher effects at leading logarithmic order accumulate in this form. It's not too surprising, in a sense. They can be written altogether as second derivative in phi of this quantity, not just n phi squared, but also h squared, logically, because I assume h is also a function of the background, and I use fluctuations in this background. And this prefactor here comes from nothing but from the fact that this h squared times log is just the expectation value of the background delta phi squared. So I give it an index 1 over k, because you might think of this as looking at your global universe, looking at some patch, small patch of size 1 over k, and measuring delta phi there, delta phi squared, and then moving this patch over your whole large region of size L. That is where the large logarithm comes from, and that gives you this effect you can calculate explicitly. So you can write this formula in an even more suggestive way. Namely, this is the almost scale invariant spectrum, the one with the k cubed removed.
Just 1 minute, again. I think you said it, but I'm a little quicker. I wasn't sure I heard it. This is the one loop correction, right?
That's the leading log part of the one loop correction.
Leading log part of the one loop correction.
Yes.
And there's a principle higher than...
Of course.
Is it obvious why you should not get any kind of correction that would just go by, like, d by d phi instead of second derivative?
Well, because the expectation value of delta phi is zero. As I said, it's all based on Gaussian random variable, Wick's theorem, so delta phi doesn't give anything. Delta phi squared and delta phi to the fourth power. That's all that there is. You can modify that if you have a theory that is.
But there's no d phi or something squared. That's the
d by d phi would be accompanied by the expectation rate of delta phi, and there's no
power.
Anyway, yeah, let me just rewrite this in the following way. So this is the almost scale invariant spectrum, which at leading order is just n phi squared h squared, familiar formula. Plus, this correction can now be written as the expectation value of delta phi squared, long wavelength modes, times d by d phi squared of this object. This object is, in fact, the three-level spectrum. So now, to make this intuitive form even more intuitive somehow, one can change variables. Replacing this phi bar, the background phi, by log k, which is the same as minus zeta, which is just a different type of inflationary clock. I mean, as inflationary clock is either the value of phi or the log of k that exits the horizon or zeta. Yeah, it's all equivalent things. So you can rewrite it. D by d phi is the same as d by d log k by d phi, and then you can convince yourself d log k by d phi is exactly n phi, so that gives you just a simple rewriting. And what you get there is now this formula, where the same spectrum P zeta is given explicitly as a Taylor expansion in zeta, expectation value squared, d by d log k of this quantity. And this here is the almost scale invariant three-level spectrum. That is just really n phi h squared written as a function of log k.
I'm sorry, why was the linear and derivatives term missing in the previous?
Because now, in the delta n formula, you choose coordinates a priori, and I did not do a shift in the end to set zeta bar to zero. There's a contribution to zeta bar because there's a non-linear relation between. So the relation between these two variables here is non-linear. And so the fact that delta phi expectation value vanishes doesn't mean zeta expectation value vanishes. But of course, you can get rid of this immediately by reparametrizing your final surface such that zeta bar is zero by definition. As this was discussed sometime before, I don't remember by whom, when it was this, Tomislav mentioned was a scale factor, It's a scale factor, you can always make it zero, but you don't have to.
Sorry to keep asking questions, I'm a little confused by the word. Can you remind me what zeta bar is?
It's the same as delta phi bar. It's actually, where was this? I wrote it somewhere. So zeta bar is the expectation value of the scale factor in a given coordinate system measured in a patch of size 1 over k. So you have a certain coarse grading patch, 1 over k. K is the frequency of the mode you're interested in. Let me go back. This is the mode you're measuring. You need, say, 10 times the size of this mode, or 20 times, or 100 times, to be able to measure this mode. In this kind of patch, you can define something which is called zeta bar of x. A smooth on the scale of 1 over k, zeta. And then expectation values, when I write things like that, when I write things like this here, this now means average over the whole huge region of size capital L. No, in the extreme case, a whole region produced by inflation.
So there's a particular point that we're looking at it at. I mean, what do I do? As I understood that phi bar thing, it had an x in it, right? Is there any x there?
This is in principle a function of, this is at every point an x, yes. And the average is an average, so.
Average out over space would just be zero.
No, that's a good point. Zeta bar, if you choose a coordinate system, zeta bar does not have to be zero. You can then re-choose a coordinate such to make it zero, but it doesn't have to be. Okay, so if you just formally take the coordinate system implied in this and make this change of variables, you get a linear term and you can then absorb it in a redefinition of the coordinates.
And one final question. Zeta has got a normalization in it so that if I were to express that in dimensionless terms, it would have a factor of gh squared, or zeta squared would go like gh squared, right?
What is g?
Newton's constant. So
yes, that's 1 h squared, yes. N phi squared also. Well, h phi squared, zeta goes here. This is here. Just this. The correlator of zeta is this. It's the usual curvature.
You've set g is 1, I think, right?
G is 1, sorry, yeah. I apologize, the whole talk, g is 1, always, yeah. G is 1, no pi's, no sines. Unless they're very crucial.
So why the d log k squared becomes k in the second division?
D by
yeah, d squared by d log k squared. It should be some differential in the second division.
This is a derivative, taking derivative in terms of log k.
Yes. I mean, why in the second equation it's directly k?
Here?
The
what, is it, what do you mean by second equation?
Yes, this equation.
This one. I haven't counted it yet. Sorry. I'll explain. Okay? Good. So if you look at this, okay, this has a suggestive form. Namely, this is like the first few terms of a of Taylor expanding this quantity with an argument k e to the minus zeta bar. So think of this as a function not of k but of log k, which you can always do, right? And then imagine that this log k is shifted by zeta bar in fact. And then you expand in this shift. Then you of course just get the terms in Taylor expansion. You get the first, the second, the third derivative in log k, and then you multiply by zeta squared, zeta. Just naive Taylor expansion. At the moment, there's no deep reason why I write this down. I just say that this looks very suggestively like this. And the expectation value is just here the average over the huge large patch, and zeta bar is some kind of small scale coarse grain zeta. Yes, it's all written here. So this is the average in zeta bar defined in patches of size 1 over k over the huge box L. And now, the question is, how can we get this more directly or more simply? And already this and the following overlaps to a certain extent of this paper of Giddings and Schloss, by whom, which is a very nice paper, which is very, very, I mean, includes a lot of ideas, and we have to be beaten by that by about 2 weeks or so. We wrote up in a hurry because we realized that this is has been said by them in a slightly different language. So I hope it's still nice to say it in my language. I don't know whether you agree that it's a little different. Let me now try to explain all of this from a completely different point of view. I will now go away from this derivation, this semi-convincing, you know, motivation, and really derive it.
One moment. The previous thing that you got has an infinite logarithm in it, right?
Of course. I only rewrote the things with infinite logarithms, and infinite logarithms are the ones that everybody's familiar with.
Now
and I didn't.
You're going to tell us how to get rid of them, right?
Right.
Okay.
Precisely. In fact, I know, the other way around. I'm going to tell you how to define something that doesn't have infrared logarithms, and then get back the other thing with an infrared logarithm.
Okay, so you'll define a new
observable. I define a new observable, which doesn't have
them, and then make the relation.
Which doesn't have them, more or less, obviously. I mean, you may criticize me for being, you know, too slick, but it will become clear momentarily. Okay. So let's now define the almost scale invariant spectrum in the following way, which is almost the usual definition, just rewritten a little bit. This is a correlator of zeta at x and x plus y, and it's the Fourier transform in y. X is, of course, irrelevant. I have average over x, so it's independent of x. And then multiplied by k cubed to make it the almost scale invariant spectrum. Okay? That's a proper definition as good as any other. Now, why is this object sensitive to the box size in which you measure? It's not sensitive to the box size because of this y, because of the distances involved here. You see, this Fourier transform, this k, is sensitive only to relatively small y of size 1 over k. It's sensitive to the box size because the physical meaning of this y is sensitive to the box size. Because this y depends on the strongly varying background quantity zeta bar, which does not appear here, but really makes a difference to what y means.
Isn't that just the usual definition of the coarse
spectrum? Absolutely, absolutely. Just usual definition. I mean, sometimes people define it as a delta function with k here, you know, whatever you want. I mean, you can. It's one of the standard definitions. So now, how can we avoid this dependence on the background zeta bar, which somehow is hidden in this coordinate y here? And that's very simple. Because what underlies this quantity is a selection of pairs of points. I really measure it by selecting pairs of points and take the zeta of one and the other point and multiplying them. And the selection of points is based on fixed coordinate distance y. And what you can do instead is you can select pairs of points in your measurement based on an invariant distance between points. The invariant distance corresponding to this y is z equals y times e to the zeta bar. That's just from the previous standard formula. And so the z dependence of such a correlator is a background independent quantity, and hence I claim is an infrared safe object. This object, of course, itself is divergent, but the z dependence of it, the way it depends on z, cannot be afflicted by the background, because if I select two pairs of points based on this x and x plus z to e to the minus zeta, zeta bar is, of course, here evaluated in the region near x, then these two points have an invariant distance of size z. Z is some vector which fixes the invariant distance. This is just physical. And by kind of intuitively knowing that inflation ends in the same way everywhere in single field, this cannot depend on what kind of background zeta bar you happen to be in. So this thing here, in its z dependence, is background independent and infrared safe, while this, in its y dependence, is not, because y is just a coordinate that is affected by the background.
You must be knowing in some approximate sense, right? I mean, that's no more.
Oh, yes. Let me not.
That's,
yes.
That's not a physical length. A physical length is some operator. That's just a C number. You mean.
What is. I only talk about C numbers here. It's a reheating surface with a given geometry. I fix the gauge to make it look like I had before and then measure things. There's no quantum field theory in this.
Z is sure.
Originally, everything is a quantum field, right. but at the moment, the level I'm just, please don't force me, there's a higher level which I can't maintain. My level is, wait. I insist on this basic level because everything else exceeds my own understanding. I have some reheating surface, or equal energy, constant energy density surface, which is parameterized here, and that's all. At the moment, and there's a parenthesis which is where we were, I'm discussing only this classical geometry on a chosen constant energy density surface. I'm not discussing anything else. Okay, please bear with me. I understand that there's a complicated quantum story behind it, which I...
But you're writing zeta in terms of creation-relation operators.
No!
No?
No.
Classical field.
It's a classical field. I'm averaging here by... Let me go back again to my...
So
sorry. I'm just averaging over this region.
Okay.
No, I'm just
so you're
measuring...
You're making a Markovian approximation of the creation-relation operator.
I don't understand. I am given. I'm observing. Okay.
So this guy fluctuates in space,
no.
Right?
Look.
Zeta fluctuates in space.
Yes.
Can you please listen to what I'm saying?
There is a reheating surface, okay, physical surface in this complicated universe. There is one given surface where reheating happens, or any other constant energy density. And this geometry measured by us, seen by us, is just measured once and for all. It's classical geometry. I'm giving the metric there. Okay.
What do you mean by expectation value correlating?
By expectation value, by this expectation value, which is all I'm talking about at the moment, this expectation value here, this one, and this one, is just measuring over the largeness of the surface. The surface is very huge for a late observer, size capital L. And I'm just averaging over it. There are many patches of size 1.
So zeta is fluctuating in space.
It just takes different values. The classical quantity takes different values.
Yes, right. The classical quantity in the context of inflation means that you're approximating a creation-relation operator by their Markovian limit. That's all you're doing.
I didn't tell you how about the averages yet. You see,
this is independent of average. This is just one statement.
I'm sorry. No, I think everybody agrees that you can measure what. Yes. Really. I mean, there's no dynamics here. I didn't tell you what. This is just measurement. Okay.
No. Also, what I told you is not dynamics. It's just a definition.
Anyway, I'm sure this can be done by people who don't know what Markovian means.
Everybody knows what Markovian means.
Yes. Okay. Good. So can we get a simple result more directly? I just discussed that you can start with this quantity here, which is infrared safe, because it depends on the physical distance between points. And now we can take the Fourier transform to get our desired infrared safe power spectrum. That is now the crucial point. So what I'm doing now is I'm taking this quantity here, which is a function of z, and z is the invariant distance of the pairs of points I pick. And I Fourier transform blindly in z. Okay, I now forget what z was. Z is just some set of three-dimensional vectors, which are what the experiments assign in terms of invariant distance to these pairs of points. And I simply take this and Fourier transform in z. And I get some quantity of k. And by the previous argument, it's clear that the information in this is only the physical information of the correlator of zeta at given physical distances. So there's no way the background can enter. Now let's get back our infrared sensitive power spectrum before. And that's, I think, the interesting technical point. Namely, I just start with the standard definition that we had before, and I introduce a trivial unit. Basically, I multiply this y here by e to the zeta, e to the minus zeta. And then I call this the new variable, the variable z, and make a change of variables in this integral. If I do that, I get out from the change of variable in the integral a factor e to the minus zeta bar, which can be combined with this k cubed. And then there is an e to the minus zeta bar left here, together from the y, which now turned into a z. And then here, in this argument, I just get exactly the combination I desire, x plus z times e to the minus zeta. So that's a pure rewriting. However, now you see that this structure here, this whole structure, is precisely the same as in our IR safe power spectrum, just that k now carries this e to the minus zeta bar. So what can I do now? I can now simply write it, it's obviously identical, to take in this p0 of zeta of an argument which is k times e to the minus zeta bar and averaging over the zeta bar. And that's, of course, exactly what I had before. Expanded. Okay, so now, unfortunately, my time is running out, and this is only half the story. What do I do? So I just give you the result, the following result. This is, in my opinion, a nice, somehow, nice supporting evidence that both previous lines of argument, both the IR safe power spectrum argument and the delta N motivated calculation are correct and fit together. Let me now come to tensor modes. Tensor modes are included in exactly the same way. I'm just going to be quick because of reasons time. Just that the reparametrization you need here is not e to the minus zeta bar only, but also e to the minus gamma bar half, which is now a matrix. Because the coordinate change that you need to get to invariant distances is not just a rescaling, but actually some linear transformation. And it's only a constant linear transformation because you're in patches, you're thinking in patches, which are small enough that the backgrounds are constant in these patches. And then you average over the whole patch, over the large patch, i.e. over these quantities. So as before, that is invariant distance. You do all of this. There's a tricky part happening now, namely that in the change...
I know you want to get this, but I don't understand anything about that. Zeta isn't the correlator for the power spectrum. Isn't HIJ the correlator for it? What's going on?
HIJ?
You're talking about tensor modes, right?
Yes. I'm allowing for background tensor modes.
Looking at you're including the effect of tensor, not calculating with tensor
No. Exactly the same way I treated this, I treat this just exactly the same way. I'm just skipping the details. Please forgive me for skipping the details. I just want to say a few more things which I think are interesting. All right, this can be done. And an interesting fact happens. If you do that, there's an extra prefactor which arrives in this average. So there's, as before, the relabeling of k, but there's an extra prefactor with a unit vector k here, which you have to average over, which has to do with the fact that the measure, d3y, transforms differently, i.e. does not transform under the gamma change. That is crucial to get the actual numerical coefficients right.
As I understand it, that's what Gaines and Slot did, is to essentially look at the dependence of the power spectrum on what the free metric would be on the graviton sector.
Mm-hmm, precisely.
They didn't include the zeta.
They did it in a different language. They did it from the Fourier space, and I'm sure that Martin, and Martin, will you explain this stuff in Fourier space as you? So you will see an alternative explanation of this. But I think it's interesting to see that a compact formula not expanded in any way. And then we can expand and check with Giddings' laws. I'm just skipping now. Actually, interesting point, again, one can expand to higher orders very easily, just the same way. You know, you have higher correlators defined in this way. Here are the variables y, and then you replace them by physical variables. I.e. y is given now as a function of zeta bar, gamma bar, and z, where z is the invariant distance, as before. And then you Fourier transform in z. So this is crucial. Measure the correlation functions in terms of invariant distances characterized by a set of vectors zeta, z. And then Fourier transform blindly in this z. What you get will be an infrared-safe correlation function, infrared-safe spectrum. The crucial point is the nesting points, originally no measures anymore. In the invariant distance rather than in y. You get some general formula, which I'm not going to explain.
But just a clarification, when you use this infrared safe one, then you don't have the time dependence that they found? When you use this one, the infrared safe quantity, you don't find this?
There's no the infrared safe quantity is obviously independent of the background L.
Right. So
but if you take the infrared safe quantity, you can express the normal one.
The question is, the infrared safe does not have this time dependence.
No, the infrared safe doesn't have the time dependence because it's obviously a local quantity in inflation, and by the assumption inflation ends in the same way locally everywhere, there's no way.
Well, that's the answer I expect. I think this is
okay. So sorry. Yes. F and L. Giddings' laws did F and L, they did the zeta contribution, we did, just to check our formalism, we did the gamma contribution, which we, I think, a little bit extends their calculations, but I don't have time to explain. This is the gamma bar expectation, where it's a log-enhanced term. Let me just skip that, because I want to say only one more thing. This averaging over zeta bar actually can be done explicitly, which is, okay, maybe you are wrong here, but it looks shockingly simple. What is the zeta bar? You average quantities of the zeta bar, and the average is over the huge observed region. In principle, you do this average of zeta bar of x, but of course, you can replace it by an ensemble average of zeta bar of 0 by homogeneity. Now, this zeta bar of 0 is just a sum of the modes, and the modes are Gaussian random variables. So basically, you have a variable which is a sum of Gaussian random variables. Okay? And what is that? That is, again, a Gaussian random variable, where the width is the sum of the widths of the previous object. So this zeta bar squared is just a Gaussian random variable with width sigma squared, which is just this log divergent integral. But that, of course, is very, very interesting, or amusing even, because you can now just calculate a single integral. You take whatever quantity you want, f of zeta bar, and you just do an integral in one single real variable with an exponential e to the minus zeta squared suppression, like you calculate the Gaussian average. For example, for the power spectrum, we just have an explicit formula in one integral of the three-level quantity. And that's true for all the other quantities as well. Generalization to gammas is more difficult. One more important conceptual comment, I promise the last one. This integral over zeta bar in fact has a lower cutoff, because it can happen that this zeta bar here is so large and negative that k becomes so large that this mode that you are forced to actually never exit the horizon. So then you have to cut. It's actually something like a...
this chunk just in that box, the yellow box, right?
I lost the troll. You basically have to cut your Gaussian somewhere. The other way around. And if you cut somewhere in the tail, it doesn't matter, But it can be that you are forced to cut right through this Gaussian, and that, of course, affects the integrals. Everything here is well-defined, but if you then blindly expand in zeta bar, there may be a difficulty coming with it, simply because this quantity is not, of course, not defined for all k. You have to realize that the three-level spectrum is defined only for k's up to the moment of end of the end of inflation. Larger k's simply never, I've never seen this. And this affects this, and it may add, I don't think it's the same, but it may add to the convergence difficulties observed by Giddingson's loss in the context of exactly calculating this power series. I'm extremely sorry. Thank you. That's it.